G8 leaders meet in France today.
Talking European debt, the IMF, and the Arab Spring.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for checking out the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org. It's Thursday, May 26th.
Some banks are looking for ways around tougher global regulations. We'll have that story coming up.
Will another big merger get the green light from federal regulators?
And the job market disappoints yet again.
And we'll talk two-stepping in Texas with the TSA. All that coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
President Obama and the leaders of the Group of Eight Industrialized Nations, Britain, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, and Russia, have started their annual meeting in Deauville, France. There are a lot of economic and political items on the agenda, and we're going to get the latest now from David Shore. He's a senior policy analyst at the Stanley Foundation, and he's with us now from Deauville. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, tell us about what the hot topics there are today at the G8.
Well, of course, they're figuring out how to respond to the democratic changes sweeping through Middle East and North Africa. Arab Spring is a hot topic. So is the euro crisis. They are talking about a new director for the IMF and aid to Africa, nuclear security, nuclear safety after Japan. Really a pretty varied menu.
And these are the richest nations in the world. This is going on in Europe. Do they tend to focus more on stuff like the European debt crisis than the Arab Spring or the things happening in the developing world?
In a funny way, the history of the G8 is to deal more with economic issues. But, of course, now we have the G20, which is really where those are supposed to be dealt with, the old major industrial powers together with the emerging economies and the rising powers. And so that means that where we are now, an issue like the Arab Spring is more appropriate for the G8.
Well, we do have the G20. Do you think that the G8 is losing some of its relevance?
I think it's a struggle. They have to show their relevance. They're groping for a new role. You really have the question, what can you deal with? What problems in the world can you really effectively address when you don't have the emerging powers at the table with you?
David Shore, senior policy analyst at the Stanley Foundation, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Chances are we're going to hear about who will lead European rescue efforts at the IMF and more about bank regulations to prevent another financial crash. There are reports today some banks are trying to spin off their risky investment divisions. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us from London with that story. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
Now, why would some banks be thinking about isolating their riskier businesses in the first place?
Well, let's take two banks in particular, UBS and Credit Suisse, the Swiss banks. They are facing the toughest regulatory crackdown in the world. Switzerland was very badly hit by the banking crisis because it has two of the world's biggest banks but a relatively small economy. So to protect Swiss taxpayers in future, the Swiss government's introduced some very, very stringent new capital rules. And Margaret Doyle of Breaking Views says the Swiss banks are asking themselves, how do we make a profit in this new environment?
Because the rest of the world isn't following suit, we'll end up being uncompetitive. So they are looking at their options and seeing what can they do to mitigate the effect of these tough new capital rules.
Is it possible, Stephen, like the Wall Street Journal reports this morning, that UBS will set up a spinoff of its investment bank outside of Switzerland?
Margaret Doyle thinks not, because for one thing, those countries where that spin-off might be set up perhaps wouldn't be too happy about exposing their taxpayers to the additional risk. Margaret Doyle thinks it's more likely that, in fact, most of these so-called universal banks in Switzerland and elsewhere in the US too will ring-fence their investment banking arms so they can be wound down swiftly in the event of trouble so taxpayers don't end up picking up the tab.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Stephen, thank you.
Okay, Steve.
Well, here in the U.S., the government said this morning the number of people filing for first-time unemployment benefits jumped by 10,000 last week to 424,000. Diane Swonk is chief economist with Mesirow Financial. She's with us from Chicago, as she is every Thursday. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, what's going on in the job market, Diane?
Well, what we're seeing is layoffs have picked up again, mostly because of interruptions because of the Japanese earthquake. And also there's still some hesitancy to hire out there with all the uncertainties we're seeing in the global economy today.
And Diane, there's a hearing going on today in Washington. I saw it's about the proposed merger between AT&T and T-Mobile. We know that mergers are not good in the short term for job growth. So where can we look for jobs?
Well, going forward, I think it's going to be a rocky summer for job growth. We are going to see manufacturing come back once the interruptions in production from Japan have passed. That's been a strong sector for, ironically, one back, a sector for job growth. But this has really been a very difficult time. Most of the employment gains we've seen is the net employment gains. Hiring has not really picked up, but firing had abated. That's been our only hope, is that, you know, we've not had as much layoffs, and now those layoffs are back up again.
Diane Swank, Chief Economist with Mesirow Financial, thanks so much as always.
Thank you.
The Commerce Department kept its original GDP estimate at 1.8% annual growth. Heinz said this morning it'll close a couple of factories here in the United States and several others overseas. The ketchup maker is trying to cope with the rising cost of ingredients and of fuel.
Good news and bad news for Sony. The electronics giant says it'll make a profit in the next year, but it lost more than $3 billion this past year.
We've got more numbers, the Wall Street ones that go up and down, and a lot of other numbers, too, inside our website, marketplace.org.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
Tomorrow we'll get a final reading on how consumers are feeling here in the United States. So far, gas prices haven't worried folks too much. In Egypt, new numbers show political upheaval can actually boost consumer confidence. Marketplace's David Brancaccio has this morning's Economy 4.0 report from the Middle East as he looks at ways the economy can better serve more people. Good morning, David.
Morning to you, Steve.
So political uncertainty, I would imagine, would make consumers more cautious, right?
Nielsen market researchers have found just the opposite in the case of Egypt. This spring, consumer confidence posted its biggest leap of any country in the world in Egypt. Researchers say it is the promise of new freedoms, political, social, and yes, commercial. If the Egyptian revolution was about forcing the country to serve more people rather than an entrenched elite, you can see how that might give people the confidence to spend more.
Now, you were in Egypt talking to folks about the economic future there. What were they telling you?
What I found was guarded optimism, emphasis on the guarded. People acknowledge the revolution wasn't a single event, but an ongoing process, and many have questions about just how far military leaders are willing to go. Now, there's no question that economic output in Egypt is taking a major hit this year. Although President Obama pledged money and loan forgiveness, Saudi Arabia is giving more, the World Bank is putting a ton in, and the government of Qatar is talking $10 billion of investments in Egypt.
Now, did that consumer confidence survey, David, look at other Middle East countries?
Well, they didn't get data in some key areas. Libya, for obvious reasons, also Tunisia and Syria were not in what was an online survey. Now, I'm talking to you from Dubai, and the Nielsen Company did find confidence March through April of this year spiking upward strikingly in this country, the United Arab Emirates. It's, I think, about the sense that the global financial crisis has receded and also driven by the fact that high oil prices are a good thing if you are, like the UAE, a seller of oil. And an example of consumer confidence that I spotted just the other day, an ATM-like machine here that dispenses, not cash, but wait for it, Steve, gold bars for about $1,600 an ounce. A bit high, I would say.
Yeah. All right. Marketplace's David Brancaccio in Dubai. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
The proposed AT&T-T-Mobile merger takes center stage in Washington today. The heads of each company will tell members of Congress that if the two become one, competition won't be reduced. That may raise the eyebrows of some lawmakers, but analysts expect the merger will get the go-ahead eventually. Our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale explains why.
In recent years, antitrust regulators have been reluctant to challenge big mergers, approving combinations of Comcast and NBC, Sirius and XM, and Live Nation and Ticketmaster. But the Obama administration's Justice Department has vowed to be a stronger enforcer of anti-competitive mergers. But telecom analyst Jeff Kagan says this merger has merit because AT&T needs the airwaves that T-Mobile can give them.
The customers that have had bad experience with the Apple iPhone, trying to just overwhelm the system with wireless data, they need more capacity. So this is something that would benefit AT&T.
The combination of the nation's second and fourth largest wireless phone providers would create a massive company of 130 million cell phone customers. AT&T would leapfrog the biggest cell phone company, Verizon, and between the two of them, AT&T and Verizon would control over three-fourths of the market. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
I don't know about you, Jeremy, but I can remember when I was a lot younger, I thought I was pretty invincible. Health problems? Me?
Nah, not me.
Well, a study out this morning finds 2 out of 5 young people have medical debt or have problems paying medical bills. From the Marketplace Health Desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Gregory Warner reports.
Young people are relatively healthy and cheap to insure, but when bad things happen...
they have less income and they have less insurance coverage.
Sarah Collins of the Commonwealth Group is lead author of the study released today. It found that 40% of young people and over half of young women have problems paying their medical bills. Having health insurance is no guarantee against going into debt. College health plans are often limited.
A lot of these policies are really skimpy, and you may not notice that it has a low lifetime benefit limit until you actually go through the benefit.
Until you have that accident or,
that's
you,
right.
or you get pregnant.
Right.
Collins says the healthcare reform law is having a major effect on this age group. 500,000 people under age 26 have already signed up on their parents' plans. And next year, college health plans have to cover catastrophes, same as private insurance does now. By 2014, over 7 million new young people will qualify for Medicaid under expanded rules. Whether they sign up depends on how invincible they feel. In Philadelphia, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
To New York State now, where lawmakers appear to have a deal to cap property tax increases. Supporters say the cap is vital to keeping homes in the Empire State affordable. But similar moves in other states have slashed public revenues. Sally Herships reports from New York.
Upstate New York is home to the highest property taxes in the country, and they've been going up by a lot every year. Columbia's Bill Emick says this hurts the economy.
We're losing jobs. We have an out-migration of graduates of all our universities because it's expensive to buy a house.
In the decade up to 2009, New York State property taxes rose over 5% a year. Governor Andrew Cuomo says he has a deal to cap the annual increase at a rate of 2%. But property tax is the primary source of revenue for New York schools. Wharton professor Robert Inman says if the state wonders what the impact of the plan would be, it should look at what's happened in California since that state passed its Proposition 13 in the late 70s.
California fell from one of the top 3 or 4 best-funded school systems in the country to now I think they're ranked 48.
Supporters of the New York plan say it's more flexible than Proposition 13. Communities can vote to override the cap to raise school funds. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Well, another round of tornadoes swept through some Midwestern states last night, injuring dozens of people and damaging property. Meanwhile, the historic floods and droughts continue in parts of the country. And when you add it all up, you get big headaches for farmers and a likely increase in the cost of crop insurance. Harvest Public Media's Tim Lloyd reports now from Kansas City.
Federal crop insurance was created after the Dust Bowl. The fear then was Mother Nature could wipe out parts of American agriculture. And even today, taxpayers subsidize around 60% of farmers' crop insurance premiums. Now, extreme weather brought on by climate change could up the ante.
You know, the unknown presents risk because insurance, what you're doing is that you're looking at your past and you're trying to use that to predict your future.
Bill Murphy oversees the Risk Management Agency, a subset of the USDA that regulates the crop insurance industry. Farmers now rely on that insurance to ride out tough years, and banks that lend to farmers rely on it too as a way to protect themselves from a bad crop season. Scott Gerlt is a crop analyst at the University of Missouri.
If there's more risk in the marketplace, we would expect to see premiums go up, which would increase the government subsidies.
So, here's the domino effect. Climate change means more risk. More risk means higher premiums, and higher premiums mean more tax dollars. Then there's the unknown. There are models that forecast how climate change will affect insurance, but most focus on America's populated coasts. That's a problem because most crop policies are held in the Midwest, and the price for crops like soybeans, corn, and cotton have never been higher. And that much money means there's that much more to lose. Just ask Richard Oswald. Oswald's tractor idles as he stands at the edge of his Missouri farmland that runs five generations deep. In 1993, his fields were underwater.
What a lot of farmers confront, farmers I've known who've quit farming, if we have 2 years in a row like that, everything we've worked our whole lives for can be gone.
And that vulnerability has record numbers of farmers signing up for crop insurance. Even without projections for more extreme weather, the Congressional Budget Office expects crop insurance to cost the federal government a whopping $77 billion over the next 10 years. That's almost twice what it was over the previous decade. In Kansas City, I'm Tim Lloyd for Marketplace.
As it prepares to go public, discount carrier Spirit Airlines says investors are less excited about its initial public offering than it had hoped. The company wants to expand its no-frills flights that charge a lot less but tack on a lot of fees. Well, over in Australia, one budget airline has plans to charge passengers when they check in for their flight with a person. From Sydney, reporter Stuart Cohen explains.
Jetstar is the low-cost arm of Australia's national airline Qantas. Under Jetstar's new rules, passengers will get a text message 24 hours before the flight time, which will include a scannable code. They'll then go to the airport, weigh, tag, and drop their own luggage, and proceed through security, all without any interaction with Jetstar staff. A limited number of agents will be available for people who need assistance, but asking for help will cost an extra $10. Passengers' groups aren't happy, especially groups representing disabled and older flyers, who they say often need help to navigate the check-in process, but will have to pay that fee regardless. Jason Westbury is head of the Australian Federation of Travel Agents.
When it doesn't work and when the technology does fail, let's face it, all technology fails from time to time, you want to know that there's someone around, and I wouldn't think it's something you want to have to pay for.
While most American carriers rolled out self-service kiosks years ago, and many allow passengers to download a scannable boarding pass to a smartphone, there's no indication any of them are planning to fall into line behind Jetstar and eliminate the last of the human touches, at least not yet. In Sydney, I'm Stuart Cohen for Marketplace.
Now to a new survey from the travel website Expedia.com. It says the average American worker got 18 days of vacation last year, but only used 14 of them. Compare that to the average worker in France who got 37 days and used 35 of them. But Steve, here is the real shame. Mm-hmm. Even when American workers did take time off, 72% of them apparently couldn't put the BlackBerry away. They kept checking in with the office while they were away.
Oh, wait a second. I have a phone call. Sorry. Oh, wait. I'm at work anyway. It doesn't really matter. Jeremy, there's a brouhaha between Texas lawmakers and the Transportation Security Administration, the TSA. The Texas House passed a bill that would have made intense airport pat-downs a misdemeanor crime with fines and even jail. They're talking about – they called it the Texas groping bill.
Right.
So you can't touch certain parts of the body, right? Well, the TSA got wind of the measure and sent a letter to the state of Texas, and it said – if you pass this bill, we're going to have to cancel all the flights in and out of Texas. The
wow.
whole shebang.
All of them.
All of them. The Senate sponsor withdrew the measure.
I'll bet they did.
Yeah.
In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. Enjoy your Thursday. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.